Historical Context, John M. Keynes, and General Theory of Employment, Interest, and Money, was presented by Charlie Dewberry on August 12, 2009, at Gutenberg College's Summer Institute, Paychecks, Politics, and Paradigms. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2009. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction, all other rights reserved. Technical difficulties resulted in the loss of the first few minutes of the teaching.
It's very difficult reading, and what I'm going to try to do is help provide a little bit of context. I've had some economics, and I'll admit I had a hard time just jumping in right there and making any sense at all out of it. So I'm just going to assume nobody got much of anything out of that. But I'm going to try to lay a groundwork in Keynes that will maybe help you then be able to discuss his ideas and what he's writing about in this concluding chapter in his book. The third thing I'm going to do is talk a little about just the movie. I want to make a caveat or two before we see the movie, at least from my perspective. So the first couple days, just to remind us where we're at, we started off late 1700s with Adam Smith establishing the free market, laissez-faire sort of perspective on economics. One question I always had in economics is, well, why do we have this weird French word for free market economy? Adam Smith wrote it, right? And the answer is, well, Adam Smith wrote this, but actually there were a lot of ideas circulating before that, and a French guy coined it in 1875. Starts with Ashinov. Anyway, in economics, that was always one thing that sort of bugged me is, I mean, if Adam Smith's the guy, why do we have this French word for his view? And the answer is, it was the view commonly held around. Adam Smith really just wrote. Okay, so first we looked at Adam Smith, and that was 1775, 1800, that time period. So he was looking and analyzing the economy at that time. Yesterday we looked at Marx. So now we're talking about down the road, 50 to 75 years, and his critical analysis of, one, what the system looked like at that time, but then his predictions. And so he claiming that there were these contradictions in the system and that they were going to lead to this revolution and take us to Nirvana, the promised land. So what I'm going to do here is, in part, one thing, I'll talk about Keynes, but I'm also going to lay the foundation, mostly economic, for what happened from roughly 1860 to 1936, or 39, somewhere in that range, just before World War II, because that's an important context for understanding why Keynes is interested in things he is. First, I want to make a couple of comments. My major training that was most valuable for this, believe it or not, is in aquatic ecology, and everybody's going to laugh. Obviously, you should, but there's a real connection here between economics and ecology. In fact, ecology is really looking at the natural economy. And so economics and ecology have really been on parallel tracks for a very long time, at least the last 100 years. So, for example, you can take most economic models, which deal with, let's say, dollars, take the same models and put them in the context of calories, material and energy moving, and now you've done ecology. So economics and ecology are really doing the same thing. The models, in fact, are almost identical. So ecologists will often look at economic models, and economists will often look at ecological models. So the ecologist is interested in the natural economy. The economist is interested in the artificial economy, as Aristotle would call man-made. We can decide whether that's a pejorative term or not. But anyway, the second thing I want to say is I want to preface this today by saying whenever I talk about something related to economics, because I'm an ecologist, I'm usually going to be misunderstood. Let me make a couple things clear. When I was in graduate school many moons ago, since that day I've been a card-carrying Republican. So the reason I say that is, for example, I've been nominated for a couple state and regional posts nationally here, and my name is immediately removed by the Republicans because I'm an ecologist. And in fact, I asked somebody about that once, and they said, well, you can't be an ecologist and a Republican. So anyway, that as we get to the end of the day, you may agree with them. But anyway, just I want to say that because in the context of what I'm saying, I am sympathetic to what Keynes's problems are, and I'm going to try to present those as sympathetically as I can. And I don't want that to be misunderstood about what my true position about that is. So I just want to put that up front because quite often people just totally misconstrue what I'm trying to say and the points I'm trying to make. So I did want to just put that on the table because that has been a major problem with regard to these issues for a long time. Okay, Keynes, he's arguably the most influential economist of the 20th century. And the effects of his work really led to the development of macroeconomics, which Chris will talk about tomorrow. And David already talked a little about this. Microeconomics looks at the level of firms and looks at supply, demand, price, sales, employment at the level of firms. And it's looking at sort of that free hand, the supply and demand. Macroeconomics is looking at a bigger picture, and it's saying things like there are other things, there's this bigger context of government that has an impact on the economy. Things like money supply, things like Federal Reserve setting interest rates, all of those kinds of things. They fall in the realm of what's called macroeconomics, this higher level. Chris is going to lay the development of that tomorrow, so I'm not going to talk directly anything more about that. But Keynes, born in Cambridge, England, studied mathematics primarily. The first really interesting thing about Keynes was he was part of the British delegation to the Treaty of Versailles at the end of World War I. And this is when he first gained notoriety. He walked out. He walked out because he said he was absolutely shocked at the level of reparations that Germany was going to have to pay. He said it will bankrupt them and it's going to lead to political implications you don't even want to think about. He wrote a book in 1919 called On the Economic Consequences of Peace. And basically, his book laid out exactly what happened in Germany for the next 20 years. German inflation in 1919, one British pound equaled 20 German marks. The following year, 250 marks to the pound. The next year, 1,000 marks to the pound. 1922, 35,000 marks to the pound. 1923, 50 billion marks to the pound. Keynes said, that's what your reparations are going to do to Germany. And then let's unpack what the political consequences of that were. He didn't know Hitler's name, but he described him pretty well of what was coming. So that put Keynes on the stage. He gained a platform because of his ability to predict the economic consequences of a country. Traditional economics would have come to the same conclusions, but for quite different reasons. And that's what began to lead to more attention being paid to Keynes. In the 1920s, he was a critic of the British staying on the gold standard at the 1914 level. So here's the situation. When Keynes looked at it, here's what happens. And when a country goes to war, in modern war, most of them go off the gold standard. And the reason is, well, the reason, let me go back to David's model that he painted the other day about the Himalayan guy. You go up there and you sell him something because you can make it cheaper. But if he doesn't buy in, ultimately, he's really digging a hole for himself. And ultimately, he's not going to be able to defend himself because he's never going to have the money to arm himself. Well, what happens now when you're a country going into war and it looks pretty equal? Basically, what every country started, I don't know when it started. I'm sure it started early. But for example, the U.S. Civil War. U.S. went off the gold standard so that the Union printed more money so that they could increase production to have increased war armament. So at least America and Britain and Europe, by that time, every time you go to war, you're off the gold standard. Because look what happens if you're not. If you don't go off the gold standard and everybody else does, they have the ability now just to go off the gold standard, increase their production, which gives them a greater likelihood of winning the war. Well, that's a newer sort of development. I mean, that was a development that existed, but it becomes more and more important in the modern world.
So here was Keynes's argument with regard to the gold standard. Okay, so in a war economy, and notice that we all know that in a war economy it's planned. You tell the military what you want. So the point is, you're not only just going off the gold standard, you've set a lot of your economic model aside here, because when it's a war economy, it's planned. So there's no free market economy during war directly, because what gets produced is determined by somebody. It's just not the invisible hand working here. And it would be tough to have the invisible hand design a military strategy and arm it for a war. So one, everybody knows that when it's a wartime situation, everybody goes to a planned economy. There isn't anyone that doesn't. Keynes looks at that and observes that. Second thing he notices is that everybody goes off the gold standard. Okay, so what's going to happen now at the end of the war? You've got this large money supply. The war's ended. And now if you go back on the 1914 gold standard, you're going to have to pull a lot of money back out of circulation. Well, what's that going to do to the economy? Keynes says the money supply is really important in determining what happened. Classical economics at this time didn't think so. Keynes said, look, my analysis is, you look what happens after war. There's a peak during the war, but as soon as the war is over, everybody goes into a recession or depression. Why? You pull the money supply back. What does that lead to? Deflation. Wages go down. Recession. Depression. So after every war, when Keynes looked at the economic situation, every country went back on the gold standard, went into a recession or depression. Why? Because you pulled the money supply back. Money now became limited. So Keynes's observation was the money supply matters. That isn't a minor player in how we ought to think about it. The next thing about Keynes is the Great Depression occurred. It gave him an opportunity to criticize the classical models. At the outbreak of the Great Depression, the response was, the market will fix it. The aim of the classical market response was, the government should balance its budget through increased taxes and government spending, but consequently, the government will end up spending less, because in a recession, they're going to get less taxes, so the government's going to get less revenue. What Keynes is pointing out is, the world has changed a little. In Adam Smith's day, it wasn't a big deal what the government did because it wasn't that much of a part of the economy. But that's not true anymore. The government has become a big player in what the economy does. So if all of a sudden the government isn't spending money, demand for goods is dropping. So what Keynes is pointing out is when you enter a recession, if you're going to balance the budget, then that's going to end up leading to the same deflation and recession. So at the beginning of Keynes's book, he says, I'm writing a paradigm shift book. The way he puts it is, classical economists have done Euclidean geometry. I'm coming in here as a non-Euclidean. I'm doing a revolution in economics. That's what he says in the first chapter. Well, I don't really think that's true. What Keynes is really arguing is, he's not really against the free markets, and he agrees that free market works great in the long term. But the long term may take a long time to fix itself. He's from Britain. At the end of World War I, Britain went back on the gold standard, and they went into a recession just like Keynes said they would. Well, from 1922 to 1936, there was only 1 year that the British unemployment rate was less than 10%. It was 9.7. What's our unemployment rate today? Okay, so there was only 1 year it was this good out of 12. Keynes's point is, long term may be a long time. And in his way of thinking, what got us into this mess wasn't the free market system anyway. We were already out of the free market system. So there are some things we need to do to get us back into a situation to allow the free market system to work. That's what Keynes is up to. That's his point. So what his revolution is about is really not free market economics into something else, but really what his criticism is the analytical tools that they're using. All right, so now that's just an overview of Keynes. What I'd like to do for just a few minutes then is I want to talk specifically about economics and what's happened here in the last while. economics at the time of World War I, all economists are really free market classical economists. There's never been a challenge to that. But what they've done is they've tried to make a science out of economics. Now they're building these more sophisticated models. And so they're using these models to basically predict what's going to happen if you do certain actions, see what kind of response you'll get from these. So what you see in economics is they're building these formal economic models. And they've gotten pretty sophisticated. But what they're doing, and here's my common critique of the whole period, what they're trying to do is they're trying to make economics a mechanical system, and they're trying to analyze it by reducing it down to its atomic parts and understand how the atomic parts work and put it back together. And Keynes is looking at that, and one of his critiques in his book is, I don't think that works in economics. So, for example, his sort of classic case that he presents, and one of the really hard things about Keynes's book is he says he rejects all the axioms of classical economics. The problem with that is, well, nobody ever really articulated what those were anymore. So they're sort of fuzzy out there anyway, so nobody knows what they are. And secondly, so you don't know which ones Keynes is criticizing and or what's going on. It makes it really hard to understand. But the one he is criticizing, and I'll try in 5 minutes to do this. I think it will be helpful, but this could be a real problem. Well, I've never understood every economics class I had. It always starts with this axiom, this principle, that I find not only counterintuitive, but absolutely wrong. And so every economics class I had, I always had to look at this and study it real careful because this is the starting point and then build off this. So economics has always been a nightmare for me. But it's called Say's Law, and French, but it's the foundation of supply-side economics. And so, for example, here's what it says. Supply always creates demand. Now, to me, that never made sense. But here's their logic. Look, everybody hates work, right? The only reason you want to produce anything is so you can get something else, right? That's the only reason anybody would ever produce anything. So the point is here, if you want a radio, you're going to make something, sell it to get the radio. And the money is just a medium of exchange. But this is about real goods. So the point is, supply creates its own demand. So if you're working, the only reason you're working is there's more pleasure to be gotten by working, which is dismal, dull, because the pleasure you're going to get from your purchase is of greater value to you than this work. So do you see how it works then? The more you work, you've created more demand. And so the assumption here is that it's the supply side. So actually, if you take this model seriously, and so this is what they're arguing, this is the mechanism of how Adam Smith's indivisible hand works. We've now described it. We understand it. And it's this called supply-side problem. So what was the problem in the Depression? Well, nobody was producing anything because they didn't produce to create demand to have employment. And Keynes is looking at that going, and he was part of the Bloomberg Group, by the way, so famous group in England who was known for a lot of outrageous activities, et cetera, et cetera. So Keynes's reply was, I don't know what you're smoking, but there ain't a human being on the planet that's ever, that whenever they think about rationally getting something, that that's their picture, that that's the logic that they're going through. He's going, okay, let's put us in a situation where your stock market just dropped 50%. Unemployment's 10%. So he's saying, and he pulls out a dollar bill and says, and this isn't really important. This is just a medium of exchange. What the supply side people are saying, and you'll hear it, this is a problem of a supply side problem. Wages and prices have somehow, for some reason, got out of whack. An implication of Say's model is that there will be no recession, no depression when the model works. When the invisible hand is working, there won't be any of those things, so something's got out of whack, and usually it's because somebody intervened, is the logic. And money is of neutral value. So in other words, doing good scientific models, we have two variables, supply and demand. Everything else is held constant. Keynes is going 50% stock market drop, your unemployment's 10% now. Is this dollar bill the same as it was in a good economy? He's going, no, it's got intrinsic value now. Because you're going, you know, things aren't looking so good. I'm going to hold on to this thing because now this may come in mighty handy. This isn't neutral with regard to the exchange of goods. What Keynes is saying, this stuff's got value. And the traditional analysis is ignoring that value, ignoring the value of a dollar. So when recessions and hard times come, what's the effect of that? He's saying, you're going to hang on to your dollar. What does that mean? Demand goes down. This is a demand-side problem, not a supply problem. To classical economists, there's no such thing as a demand problem because supply always generates its own demand when the invisible hand works. That's the assumption. And as I say, I've never been able to make sense out of that. And so that's the heart of what Keynes is in part critiquing. Because what he's looking at is he's saying it could right itself, but it's going to take a long time. Let's recognize that money plays a role, that it's not a neutral value. It's not a neutral variable in what's going on. There's lots of factors here that are all involved. We can't just take two factors and put them together. Okay, so hopefully that's going to be a little bit helpful because what he's going to say is, so the first two pages is he's going to say, classical model says this is going to happen. Well, I say, look at it. It's never happened that way. It's always happened like this over here. So just at least just look at the first pages saying the classical models tell us X, but I'm saying when I look at it, looks like Y, the opposite. And so what he's saying is, it's your analytical tools that are all messed up in economics. These tools we've built to make a mechanical scientific enterprise out of Adam Smith's ideas. Okay, last thing then, just I'll make a couple comments before the movie here. The movie is a good movie. It's worth watching. The only thing I got a little angst over is in most things, it's going to plant Keynes against Hayek as two contradictory sorts of views here. Well, one, neither one of them, and I'll argue tomorrow, Hayek is not a free market economist, but there's no free market economist here. And in fact, Keynes said he didn't have any fundamental disagreement with Hayek, and Hayek didn't have any fundamental disagreement with Keynes. There is a difference, but it's not. One's for planned economy and one's a free market guy. And it's sort of portrayed that way. And there is a real issue there, and yes, there is a war, but it's not that these individual positions exactly represent the endpoints. So Keynes and Hayek by themselves are not so far apart as you would be led to believe in the movie. However, the implications that people are taking away from of reading Keynes and Hayek do lead to these two different conclusions. And so I just wanted to make that caveat because it really paints them in one end of the spectrum or the other. And what I want to argue is that's not really fair to either one of them. But other than that, I'll stop at this point.